This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In a report early this year, UBS Investment Bank says it has not yet seen a more general crisis of confidence. 6 months down the road, with global growth and sentiment still muted, we posted the same question to Paul Donovan, senior global economist of the bank, if he still holds the same view.
I don't think we have a crisis of confidence from an economic sense. I think there is a reasonable concern about heightened political risk in the current climate, where we are seeing an increasingly bipolar political environment in many economies. That political uncertainty may change people's behavior. If people are worried about the future, if they are worried about the consequences of political action, that can have more negative consequences in the medium term.
But don't politics vary from one country to another?
I think the problem with political risk is, as you say, it varies from one country to another. Politics is local. Economics is global. I can go anywhere in the world and talk about consumer price inflation and people will understand what I mean. But politics is something which requires a local specialized knowledge. So I think that the problem here is more that we are seeing increased uncertainty and with that an increased threat to globalization of financial markets and capital flows. Investors feel that they don't understand what is happening in Europe with the debate over the Eurozone or with French politics, or they don't understand what is happening in the United States with the polarization of politics between presidential candidates Clinton and Trump, or they don't understand what's happening in the UK with the referendum on EU membership, or they don't understand what is happening in Japan with the failure to get reform through the Japanese diet. So I think that politics is something which has the potential to reverse a lot of the globalization of investment and capital flow, and that is perhaps its biggest threat to the world economy.
Paul explains how big of a threat does political risk pose in terms of its spillover to the world economy and growth.
Political risk has the potential to have significant implications for the domestic economy, particularly now. We're in a world of increased regulation. Increased regulation means increased political interference in the economy, for good or bad, but it changes the way economic structures evolve. And at a time of structural change, the fourth industrial revolution, I think this is particularly important because as you see more and more political change, some of that change may be resistant to global economic forces to structural change. Generally speaking, people are scared of change and try and resist it. So I think that there is a great deal of potential for political risk to impact the wider economy through financial markets, through regulation, through education systems, and through how we interact with one another.
Speaking on the impact on financial markets, we asked Paul if the movements in equity markets are any indication of what's to come in the economy.
Equity markets are not the same thing as an economy. In fact, nowadays, the composition of the equity market is very, very different from the composition of the economy in most cases. And there's no necessity for equity markets to have any predictive power over an economy. Most companies listed in equity markets around the world are very large and global. In the United States, companies in the S&P 500 perhaps account for around about 15% of the U.S. economy. The other 85% of the economy is the public sector, is small businesses, service sector companies, which are not included in the S&P 500. Therefore, if we get something which shocks the S&P 500, it doesn't necessarily have to shock the overall economy. For example, half of S&P earnings come from outside the United States, but exports are only about 10% of the U.S. economy. 45% of S&P earnings come from manufacturing and mining, but these sectors are only 15% of the U.S. economy. So a shock on the oil price or a shock on the dollar will affect S&P earnings, but have very little impact on the economy. And therefore, the movement of the S&P in response to a dollar shock or an oil shock is not actually going to tell economists very much about the direction of the wider U.S. economy in the future.
What about the role that economic data plays today? The fact is that data in the US and Europe are being revised more often, and with generally larger revisions than they were in the past.
I think for the most part, initial estimates are pure guesswork, which have very little resemblance to reality. Data is being revised more and more often, and it can take up to a year and a half to have even a partial picture of what is going on in an economy. Something like the US payrolls report, which is very closely watched by financial markets, is a good example of this. One of the problems, however, is that financial markets are impatient, and they tend to react to the initial data release and not to revised economic data. The result is that markets basically price off of the worst quality data available. While economists, of course, use the best quality data available in their models, they use data after it has been revised.
How do policymakers or central bankers then make use of this data to make proper policy decisions? Do they rely on the initial data release, or do they wait for revised data, then act upon it?
Most good policymakers will look at long-term trends in data, and they will look at a wide range of data releases. This is what the Fed means when it says they are data dependent. Data dependency does not mean that members of the FOMC cluster around Janet Yellen's Bloomberg terminal on the first Friday of every month to look at the payrolls number. Data dependency means that members of the Fed look at the long-term trends, and they look at a lot more than just payrolls. They're looking at a wide range of indicators to give as complete a picture as possible. And I think that if you use a very wide data set and you are looking at trends, you will end up with a more reliable picture about where economies are going. Economies tend to evolve slowly over time, so looking at trends in data is the best way of gauging the strength of the economy, and that's what good quality policymakers will tend to do.
Paul explains why there is a deterioration in the quality of economic analysis today.
The problem with economic data is that it was, for the most part, designed 60 or 70 years ago. Most economic data today is survey-based. GDP is a survey, unemployment's a survey, inflation is a survey weighted by another survey. The problem with that is that nobody fills in survey forms anymore. And because people don't fill in government surveys, the government has less and less data. In many cases, less than 50% of surveys are filled in. And as a result of that, the data is incomplete. Statistical agencies are receiving less and less government funding and are less and less able to improve the quality of the data. Big data, which is often something which is lauded in financial markets, is not actually very useful on economics. Big data works quite well if you're looking at a company or you're looking at a very, very narrow area of the economy. It doesn't work well for overall economic analysis. So until we improve the quality of data capture, I'm afraid to say the problems of revision are going to get larger and larger.
To wrap things up, Paul shares what trends in the global economy he is observing over the next few years.
So over the course of the next few years, we are going to be experiencing, I think, significant structural change in the global economy. This is what the World Economic Forum calls the fourth industrial revolution. This is the introduction of robotics and automation, the virtual economy, artificial intelligence, and so forth. In this situation, I think a lot of established relationships are going to be challenged. One which I think matters particularly to Asia is the fact that we are likely to see a localization of production, and global trade patterns will start to change. At the moment, global trade as a share of global GDP is reaching a record high, but the composition of global trade is shifting away from goods and towards services. If you buy music nowadays, you buy a service because you download it. 10 years ago, you bought a CD, which was a good. So we're changing the way that the world works, and that changes established patterns and established ways of doing business. I think it also changes the measures of success in the global economy. In particular, in the changes that we're going to be seeing, skills in the labor force become increasingly important. But it's a certain sort of skill. People need to learn how to be adaptive. People need to learn how to change their skill set over time. And flexibility becomes increasingly important in the labor force. So I think we are changing the way that we work and changing the way that we do business. And these structural changes have profound implications for the way the world works. The model which worked for the last 20 years, including the Asian economic model of the last 20 years, is absolutely not going to work in the next 20 years.
We asked Paul if he thinks traditional businesses, labour markets are well positioned to capture this big of a change in the next 10 to 20 years.
I think at the moment, no. the structure of labor markets and businesses is not properly positioned. But then in structural change, that is not that unusual. It's rare for existing businesses to be necessarily well positioned. Some businesses and some economies, some education systems will adapt. Some will not. And I think that the evolution of this over the next 10 years will be a source of considerable disruption in the global economy, changing the way that we think about things. But I think that a lot of the systems that we have in place at the moment will have to change.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.